And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, welcome to Claire! And your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Easy to do. Don't need a government form. I declare my independence. See how easy it was? That's what you need to do. You know, I'm really pleased to... next hour, we have... And let's go ahead and pull out the card here. And we have Richard Grove. Now, Richard Grove is going to be on for 2 hours, and we're, you know, get all down nitty-gritty, and, you know, here comes the new world empire of order kind of roomy people, and he's been doing a lot of work. I just saw an interview that we have Richard on several times. He's a young man in his 30s that just, damn, got woken up. He's on Wall Street and saw what happened behind the scenes and got all John Taylor Gatto'd and Edward Griffin'd and man. And he's doing a whole series on history, bringing all of us into the digital age from the VHS videotapes of the guys that did the research and have all that. And he's getting it all updated, searchable and up for all the next generation to understand, it's been collectivism versus individualism for like forever. And, I was thinking about it. It goes back to like caveman days. I mean, there's the one guy out there just wanting to be left alone, providing for himself and doing fine, leave me aloneism, and, you know, William Wallace Braveheart in his hut or whatever and doing fine. And then there's the other guy that's kind of got this little serfdom thing going on, and I'm the biggest guy with the club, and all these guys work for me, and I'm a parasite, you know? And it's always, and the difference is what? It keeps going on and on and on. What happens is through innovation, education, knowledge, technology, whatever, all the serfs can start taking care of themselves, and they can all become William Wallace's. Well, then what? Well, the serf is like, hey, you know, the leader, the lord of the manor is going, no, you guys are supposed to be, you know, working to provide for me. Okay. Well, the philosophy is what? It hasn't changed. And any smart guy, you know, starts to see this. Well, we're going to have a gentleman on today that's going to help us with that. Paul Rosenberg, Freeman's Perspective, freemansperspective.com. Freeman with an S, freemansperspective.com. His monthly newsletter tells you all about what's what. Now, you go over his bio here. He's, you know, it's dedicated, his newsletter is dedicated to economic, personal freedom, independence, you know, becoming, you know, free man, you know, I get it. In a previous life, he's a successful engineer that was called an expert witness in numerous legal cases and consulting and high-profile organizations like, you know, NASA and the U.S. military. And one, you know, let me tell you, one of the things that caught my eye, and he also co-founded the Fiber Optic Association and wrote the first ever standard for the installation of fiber optic cables. So the boy's got skills, you know, understands communication, the speed of communication, the advancement in communication. So it doesn't surprise me he would go on start communicating. I am looking forward to meeting a Paul Rosenberg. I'm glad I can introduce him to you. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
This is, and you'll get to know about us as time goes on, and hopefully after the end of the day, and see, you know, how we overlap. And some of the pictures that Donna has up, graphics for the video, I see you and Jeff Berwick, and we have Jeff on tomorrow. So
for
the Dollar Vigilante. And just yesterday, we had in studio for a couple of hours, Nomad Capitalist, young man that's going around the world wanting to learn about such things. And I'm sure a lot of the guys you know, we know a lot of the same people. I am so glad to get introduced to you. From your perspective, tell me who you are and your newsletter and introduce yourself to the audience, would you please?
Oh, boy. You know, my problem is that I never have a coherent category that I fit in. Really, I'm just kind of an outside observer on the world. I've been a Liberty guy for a long time, and I just, you know, I'm kind of mentally far enough outside of the system to run across things that nobody else does. You know, I have the free site at Free Man's Perspective, and then I have a newsletter. We call it the premium newsletter, whatever. The funny thing about it is that I cover all these things, philosophy, history, science, all this stuff, and there's all these things that nobody else has ever bothered to cover. I was talking to Berwick, and I said, you know, it's like I'm cheating, Jeff. There's all these things nobody, so far as I know, has ever looked at them. I did an issue a couple months ago on an examination of government as a business and went through and said, well, you know, I did historically. I said, you know, where are their income sources? What are their expenses? How does the system operate? What are their margins?
The Lord on the hill.
Yeah. But so far as I can tell, no one's ever done that before. I mean, maybe somebody did, but I've never seen it and I can't find it.
You know, the closest, we had a speaker at one of our, we do a Freedom Summit every year, and if you look at the speakers list, you'd probably recognize almost all of them. One of them was Hans Hermann Hoppe. And a professor in Las Vegas, and he made the point that, you know, a monarchy is better than whatever we got now because, well, you know, one, it's easier to take out one guy, but, you know, it's... he saw government as a business, and it was best operated when you had a profit motive. You know, like the king, you know, there's like the treasury went down. His stack of coins went down or something, you know, his income. He's like looking at it more as a business as opposed to just spending other people's money because it was his money. I thought was a unique observation.
I think he's entirely correct. When you have a king, there's one person who is personally responsible. And if he does some really stupid stuff, you know who to blame. Whereas now what we have, supposedly, you know, we all make the decisions. And so then the guy who's doing all the stupid things in Washington isn't really to blame. It's somehow magically everyone else's fault because, you know, the system put him there, which is us somehow.
Well, I'm the scale's off these eyes, man. You know, so my thing is being a man of the world and having a overall larger view, what philosophy drives you? I mean, how is it that you're coming to these conclusions or even know what unique things to bring to your readers?
Boy, that's a great question.
That's why I asked.
That could go in so many ways. Let me give you one important moment in my young life. That kind of put me this direction. At about 14, 15, 16 years old, through a long series of events, I ended up at a gym with guys who were 40 and 50 and 60 and were very successful, very hard-driven businessmen and entrepreneurs, guys who were rich this year, broke next year, and rich the year after that. And once the novelty of my youth wore off, I was just one of the guys grunting and sweating. And these guys let everything hang out in the gym. And I got a real fast education into the world. And I began to think, you know, what is right precisely why? What is wrong? I was raised well. I had a pretty good idea of right and wrong. But, you know, I wanted to understand it at this point. I was old enough. And one day I just happened to walk across something in my school on the wall. Oh, need to go to a break?
Yeah, I'm like, no, go ahead and hold it. You're almost done. No, hold it. We'll hold it. You got the edge of your seat audience. You know, the defining moment in Paul Rosenberg's life. We're going to hear all about it when we come back here on Declare Your Independence. We'll be right back.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT Full Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, Phoenix.com. Now, Paul Rosenberg is my guest. We're going to find out, you know, he's an international man mystery kind of thing. So we're going to go ahead and find out, you know, one of the realizations, what makes him, you know, and we're going to come closer and have mom. I can already tell. You know, now what we're going to do is finish up where we left off. You're at the gym and you had some kind of realization. Go ahead, without music going over you, please go ahead and share that for us. Will you please, Paul?
Sure, be glad to. Anyhow, I was walking just happenstance in between classes at high school, and there was a copy of the Declaration of Independence on the wall. And I stopped and read it. I mean, you know, it was just sitting there. Everybody just walked by, but I actually stopped and read the preamble, and I was absolutely thunderstruck. And I looked at it, and I said, this is what's right. You know, these truths are self-evident, that all men are created equal, you know, they have inalienable rights. Anything abuses those rights, that's their duty to change it. I looked at it, I said, this is right. And somehow, the very next thought that just kind of popped up in me was, nobody believes this. Nobody acts like this is true. They act like the opposite is true. And that was really a very fundamental moment for me as a young guy. And it really directed a lot of my thinking afterward.
You know, I had a similar realization. There was a teacher or a minister, it was in high school, and they said, if you want to improve yourself, pick someone that you admire or the traits about them, and then, you know, try and do what you think they would do. It's kind of like, what would Jesus do thing?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And it just really, I had always been impressed with Thomas Jefferson and a lot of, because I understood, it was, you know, Declaration of Independence, before I even read the Declaration of Independence, it was more a understanding that the individual is supreme. And that, once you get that, and we've done a lot of activism to try and instill that, is you own yourself. That's what the philosophy of liberty animation that we use a lot in different things. Hell, we had it translated into Arabic and dumping it in PAL formatted DVDs on Tahrir Square. Seriously. We have our own.
Good for you.
We have our own Haria Phoenix, which is Arabic for Freedom's Phoenix. We got our own Arabic Facebook and Twitter. Man, we're right in the middle of that Arab Spring thing. And as we were exporting the Levolution, and it, how I understood is this thing is not contained in anywhere geographically. It's in the minds of generation next. This is what we do. And that's why I can recognize in what you're doing here. And I tell you what really got my interest is the fact that you really were so instrumental in the technology of fiber optic, because that right there tells me you understood the exponential increase in the ability of communication. Tell me about that.
Oh, you know, the ability of people to communicate almost for free and with people on the other side of the world instantly, this is a huge, huge big deal. So many of the problems of the world have been, been ginned up because people were ignorant of things and couldn't check on them. The people on the other side of the hill, they're monsters. We're going to have to fight against them because, you know. But once you know the guy on the other side of the hill, he's not a monster. He's just like you. And just this, you know, when I began with a lot of the freedom people some decades ago, you probably know the same story. The guys who really got it were a handful of really overeducated guys on the East Coast and maybe a few on the West Coast and a scattered few in between. Well, now the people that understand liberty are everywhere. There's, you know, kids in Homer, Alaska, and Tyler, Texas, and a thousand others who really get it. And this didn't happen before. This is, you know, when you actually stop and get your mind out of the daily tragedies that we hear about all the time, and look at this picture. This is a miracle. The number of people who now, young people, who get liberty and are willing to get off their butt and act, this is a miracle.
You know, it was such a surprise to so many people, but to a lot of us, it wasn't. Now, the Levolution thing that hit in 07, you know, that logo was like a year before we had it here in Arizona. It was already, you know, market tested, man. I already could see what was going on. They wanted a total revolution, but not violently. And
right.
And Dr. Paul represented it so well, but he was still in politics, and he never got me to say anything about voting. And I sure as heck aren't going, you know, Republican. So I'm just like, no, talk to the hand. I don't know what you guys think. No, you're not going to control this. If you want to kill a movement, try to control it. That is the biggest mistake. And I was encouraged to trademark the logo and all this kind of stuff. I'm going, no, you don't get it. It's a peace symbol, man. You know, just let it go. Let it go. Because I had faith in these young people because I was them. You know, earlier, 20 years before, my wife and I had been doing it. I knew what I wanted. It's what everybody wanted, not to be lied to. I want to know the truth. I want to, and that's what you're supplying in this perspective to the people that are reading your stuff, that has the benefit of your intelligence and your background and the communication and so on. And I'm wondering what it is that you offer the new person to freedom, that why would they get your newsletter? I mean, I'm going to, you know, what Paul has to say matters to me because why?
Because the world is a really confusing place. And when you can actually see the history, where it came from, I mean, the real history, not textbooks, you know, the thing when it actually makes sense, oh my God, things become so much clearer. Things become so much easier. Like I say, it's like you're cheating. You know what's going on, you know what's going to happen, and it's not confusing. You don't have to be some, you know, hyper genius guy to be able to see it and really strain and struggle. No, it becomes clear and it becomes easy.
Okay, now I want to nail you down on some specifics here. Now, in the next couple of hours, we're going to have Richard Grove. He's one of these young guys that, man, he got it, and he wants to share it, and he's got skills. So I'm going, you know, there are just so many representations of what you just said, but from your perspective, get what? What is it that they're getting?
Oh, that all of the burdens that have been placed upon us, and I don't mean just taxation or things like that. I mean the emotional burdens. I mean the stresses. I mean the pressures that push down on people every day. They're artificial. They're created for a reason. The current system, and I don't mean any particular government, but I mean the style of governance that exists in the world now, it is necessary to such a system that people are insecure, that people are afraid, that people are distrustful of their own nature and their own judgment. The system can't survive without it.
Without what?
Without us feeling bad, without us distrusting ourselves.
You know, it's fear and doubt, fear and doubt, fear and doubt.
Yep.
And then we're going to lead you because you got so much fear and doubt that we put in you because we can, because we got the propaganda and the government schools and fear and doubt. I get it.
Yes.
All right, man. All right. No more fear. No more doubt. And to help you along, you might get Paul Rosenberg's newsletter.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Thanks to Paul Rosenberg. I just, you know, I'm rounding out my examples, word pictures I try to create. He's helped me out with this one. Paul Rosenberg, freemansperspective.com. You can go there and they'll send you to his newsletter that you can purchase. I suggest take a look at it and see what's up. He also has a company that's, you know, for online privacy and so on. It's called CryptoHippie.com. CryptoHippie.com. Go check that out. You know, I'm sure that would be a benefit to a lot of people. But a lot of it's just an understanding. And as I talk to him, I go, come on, don't be modest. I mean, you're one of those big brain box guys, right? Uh-huh. You're pegging up over there in the, you know, single digits percentage of the intelligence IQ scale. Come on, I can tell. Yep. You know, okay. Well, you know, maybe, you know, I can work my way out of a wet paper bag. Okay. So I'm going, as I get older and I start to experience the capacity of various different peoples, I mean, you know, wealthy billionaires, intelligent people, you know, they can be Dr. Evils or they can for good. You know, they can go either way. Hopefully, you know, you can get the right operating system. This is how I look at somebody that has a really fast processor can kind of plow through a lot of stuff. If you've got a RAM, a lot of RAM, random access memory, you got a lot of RAM in your computer, you can have a lot of windows open, a lot of programs open, you can juggle a lot of things at the same time, you can parallel process a lot of information. And if you got, you know, good memory retention, you got a large hard drive. So some people have all these going together. They got a big giant hard drive. You know, they can process the information fast. You know, they can keep a lot of, you know, things on their desk at one time, and their desk probably looks messy, and they know where everything is, don't touch it, you know. So we have these kind of guys. And I go, but for me, it's, you know, I'm running with a philosophy that's cleaned a lot of the stuff away. And I'm like, look, you know, it's a thou shalt leave me alone. You know, I mean, I don't, freedom's the answer, what's the question? And once you get to that, it just, it kind of cleans up my little bitty old, Windows 95, operating system. It doesn't have a lot of clutter. I can get it, you know. And then Paul's goes, you know, you got the right operating system. You don't need the big giant processor if you got the right operating system. And I'm going, you know, I'm adding that because, damn, if that isn't clarity right there. I want to talk about the operating system that we have. And you can see, and we'll get that with Richard Grove in the next couple of hours, that they're trying to install in young people a messed up, jacked up operating system. That's what's going on. Human beings are great until they get done with all their GMO, turn us into freaking frogs or whatever the hell they're doing. You know, you got physically, they got to change us. Humanity marches on. We have enormous capacity. I mean, look at our lifestyle that we've been able to attain. Heck, the poorest of us, you know, look at Thomas Jefferson, I'm going to the outhouse as being poor. You know what I mean? So I'm going, we live in a veritable utopia here in America right now. It is, but it can get bad. And it's because of what they're trying to turn us into. Do you see the same kind of thing, Paul? I mean, give us your perspective.
Oh, yeah. It's like I say, it's been on purpose. Schooling, government schools being the prime example. I know you talk about John Taylor Gatto, so you know the history going back into the 1800s and how these people purposefully, proudly set it up as a conditioning center. And that's a real problem. One of the things that they do, though, and this is really Karl Marx was the guy who really made this happen, is they abuse people with word games. They pull out word formulas. And, well, if we believe this, we have to believe this, right? And if we believe this, we have to believe this, right? And they throw them at people fast. And people are intimidated, and they, and they go along with it, and they turn into slogans that the people remember, and they just kind of stick with them. And it's really purposeful manipulation and purposeful abuse, but they get these people sucked in with this, and then if they're not careful, you can just stay sucked in, and instead of actually thinking, just repeat slogans, you know, that you pull out of your memory for your entire life. And it's a real problem.
You know, they never can, you know, this is one thing that I learned, you know, I was high school and a wrestler and so on, and I realized that if you trained and you practiced and so on, and, you know, strength had a lot to do, endurance, all that other stuff. But if you had a move, there's a counter to that. And then there's a counter to that and a counter to that. And I always realized that if you were able to go more than three deep, you prevailed because they just couldn't go that. So I recognize that when I'm dealing in politics and philosophy with people, as I go, they go, yeah, well, bullet point slogan RNC gave me 3x5 card Rush Limbaugh point number one. And I go, yeah, but what about blah, blah, blah? And you counter it. Well, then they come back with some counter. Then you counter that and then they're done. And maybe they can go three, but they don't deal well going up against a libertarian philosophical Jedi masters. I'm like, are you seriously? You guys want to have this conversation? I've already done this five gazillion times because they're just like you were saying. They just kind of with force and with graphics and with, you know, flashbangs, and they just, you know, therefore all Muslims must die. I mean, you know, that's kind of crap. And I'm going,
right?
You know, this is I'm like, wow, you're. They really are limited. They haven't thought it through. They can't go more than two or three moves, and then they're done. And then they, and you know who they are. They've gone up against libertarians before, because whenever that finally comes out, you're a libertarian, they're like, oh, they run away. They don't want to talk to you.
Right. And, you know, one of the nice things about the internet is that most of these arguments take place in print. And, you know, when somebody's talking to you in person, and they go fast and they say something that's almost right, but not quite. And then they base something else upon that that's almost right, but not quite. And when it's going quickly, you can't keep up and you can't really see what's the problem in the argument.
But when it's written,
in print, you can go back and you can analyze it and you can take it apart and you have plenty of time with which to do it. And the arguments just fall apart.
Okay. I was born in 61. I'm 52. Do you mind me asking how old you are?
I'm 54.
Okay. So we're about the same era. We came up with, while you're doing the fiber optic and getting kind of you were at the early days of, and you could see the expansion of email lists and the discussion and so on. See, a lot of these young kids, they don't know what we know, exactly what you just said. The first time that these types of discussions and arguments were two-way in print for everybody to see. And it would go and forth. And there was an argument that I did as a young man. It was called Legitimacy of Government. Ernest Hand. You Google that, and it'll come up, and it was an email exchange that somebody took and put on a website, started coming back to me like a decade later from 1994. And I'm going, this guy, man, he's got it going. Oh, that's me. That's good. So what happened was it was a young man understanding that the only thing that government really seeks is legitimacy. You know, if it was just force, you know, they just got enough guns. They go, yeah, we rule you. Conquer is easy. Control is not. And the reason they need legitimacy, look, we pulled the sword from Excalibur, or this Pope laid hands on us, or we got voted in, or whatever, thereby we rule you. Once you get past that, you clear out your operating system. So
yes,
I'm looking for the future, and that really intrigues me, the fact that you're, you know, this age, you saw this coming. Your communication, seeing the expansion in communication and the speed and the globalness of this, it gives you a unique perspective. What makes your newsletter probably very valuable to a lot of people is because you're coming at it from a foundational, fundamental human way we work. And you see the future as what?
I see the future as golden. In the long run, we're at a peak of we have a lot of problems at the moment, but they're not permanent problems, at least not yet. There's so many people that just don't want to open their eyes because they're scared and they're already overwhelmed. And they don't want to think about anything else bad. But as we go forward, if we get past this next piece, we're golden.
I agree. You know, Libertopia, you were there last year. We'll be going this year again. Doug Casey was there. You know, Doug's a good friend. He's, spent time sitting there chewing it. And he's like, look, man, the future is awesome because all the infrastructure's still here.
Yeah.
You know, we're good. Oh, more with Paul when we come back.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
And Paul Rosenberg, my new best friend.
Yep.
You know, it's always good to have someone that gets it. You know, gets what? This is one thing, all the stuff that's going on, it's always, you know, oh, they're, look how bad they are. I mean, I started, it was a long story, but bottom line was in the 90s, you know, I give speeches and everything one time, and it kind of became a catchphrase of mine. People kept repeating it. It was freedom good, government bad. Well, then it got to where it was like, freedom good, government bad, bad, bad. Then it got up to five bads and seven bads. I'm like, you know, what are you going to do? You know, freedom good, government bad, 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 bad. There's seven, okay? And what I got to do, keep adding bads? I'm like, I need to get back to one to three. I mean, you know, because, you know, I get it. You know, why are they bad? Because they're opposite of freedom. I mean, you know, it's not that hard. So my thing is I'm going, look, once you come to that realization that ruling other people, if you're going, you're, of course you're going to have some kind of, you know, governing, self-governing, tribal yourself and neighbor and agreed to kind of not a gun to your forehead, not allowed to leave and we take your money kind of, you know, government. But I mean, just, you know, just you can govern yourself. Once you come to that realization, forever will it dominate your path. So when they have all of this amping up, we got troops in the street, a police state, are we there yet? Are we there? Are we there yet? At what point do we get to say we're there? And then what? You're gonna go meet them on the village green? You know, what are you going to do? Paul, help me out here, man. What's the answer?
The answer is exactly what you're saying, to live your life and do it your way. And regardless of them, you know, the great story of this that nobody knows is from the end of Rome. There were people there that were anarchists. They call them cynics, interesting guys. And they were out there, and they were right that government is, you know, one man ruling over another is inherently immoral. And they were out doing this, but the cynics made one big error. And that is, instead of continuing on their path, they stopped to throw rocks at the state. And, you know, criticizing Rome and telling Rome what it had to do. Well, they never kept moving on the road. But there were another group of people called Christians who felt the same thing. I mean, you know, my kingdom is not of this world. You know, Christianity is an anarchist religion, really.
That's how I saw it. Jesus is libertarian.
yeah, an anarchist, really. But anyhow, these people, rather than stopping and throwing rocks at Rome, they just kept walking on the road, and they just said, you know, Rome is Rome, it's evil, and it does what it does, and we're not part of it, and we do our thing. Well, the cynics never made it through, but the Christians did.
You know, that was one thing we did as a young activist, going to church, my wife and my kids being brought up, you know, going to private school and all this kind of stuff. So I got enough, you know, in the parking lot, enough W bumper stickers to last me for the rest of my life, but... The one thing that I learned in the early 90s when they started doing this, so we're a Christian nation. I found all Christian. I go, really? Okay. So we did bumper stickers that said Jesus is libertarian. So we had them everywhere. And they're like, oh, no, he's not. He's Republican. So we put like a small L libertarian. And the point that we were making is it was an article that was done by the Acton Institute. I think they wrote an article about how Jesus was libertarian because he used, persuasion and teaching and education and witness and testimony. It was all voluntary persuasion. He didn't go to Caesar and say, make him be his brother's keeper and get your legion to put a sword to people to make them behave a certain way. I mean, that wasn't it. It was all by example. That I have no problem with. And it was just, and in fact, regardless of my spiritual leanings, their evolution, where it doesn't matter, I saw it was a benefit for me to take my children certainly out of the public school system or government school system and expose them to this. And then it was easier for me to, you know, undo whatever indoctrination I worried about there. So it is a cultural thing. My entire life has been the realization it's not about voting blocks. It's about blocks of minds. And it's gotten from the point to how many minds can we free to now I'm feeling it's how many asses we can save. And I go, what do you have as a suggestion and what you do with your newsletter and so on? That are you starting to make that shift? Are you trying to save as many asses or assets or whatever of people? I mean, of what service are you in what way?
Well, we do a lot of things. One of the things we're doing right now is we're finishing up a big report on Bitcoin. I've been into digital currencies forever. And where we cover those sorts of things as well, encryption, currencies, you know, dealing with silver and gold, all those sorts of things. We cover those, too. Like I say, right now, I'm really excited about Bitcoin. I mean, it's a really complicated subject. There's points good and bad and all sorts of things going on. But the bottom line is we have these 20-somes and 30-some kids who are active. They're not just sitting. They're not just talking. They're building things. They're making things. They're using things. They're active in the search for liberty. And, oh, my God, is that exciting.
I am very aware of the excitement behind Bitcoin and the possibility. We take Bitcoin. We've been covering it forever. Donna's going to send you some of the editions that we did just on Bitcoin, all the information. People, I know all these guys from for years. But I'm telling you. You know, I see it coming under attack. I saw the mistake of them trying to get some kind of government legitimacy or something. And I'm going, what the hell are you guys thinking? Well, because they wanted to make a business out of it. They wanted to be able to make the conversion from Bitcoin to dollars. And I'm like, man, if you're not making it convertible to, you're worrying more about silver and gold than the dime, you can't. Well, it's just that's the mindset they were in, and they walked right into the trap. So
yes, they did.
So I'm like, Bitcoin, the first question is, do you think it's a viable cryptography? You think quantum computing is going to blast it away, or is it still going to be a currency in the future, or what?
Well, I think it is a viable currency. I think it is going to do well. Quantum computing is, of course, a wild card, but that's still uncertain and still some years off in the future. It's something we have to think about, but they're not able to really do it yet, so we don't have to worry about it yet.
Bitcoin comes real quick, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, we watch it. Myself and some business partners of mine, we watch it, and we're not too concerned yet. But we'll raise a balloon one day, I'm sure.
Thank you.
But Bitcoin is awesomely cool, and what makes it important is not the code itself, which is very good, but again, it's this whole network. There are Bitcoin exchangers in every town. These are guys who will meet you at a Starbucks and take your wad of fiat currency and send you Bitcoins, or vice versa.
Yeah, that is the exchange. Why would they want to have this bank government-approved kind of, what the hell were they thinking?
To be honest, I think some of them want to become the next, Facebook billionaire.
No, I understand that, the financial, and so you want to try and knock yourself out. But it, for a lot of people, they'll go, see, they went after this guy, they got him. I'm like, that has nothing to do with Bitcoin.
Right. I mean, I've been warning for some time that they're going to take out the large internet exchangers because, come on, if Bitcoin succeeds and grows, what does that mean to the central banks of the world who have this fiat monopoly? It's a serious existential threat to them.
Well, what about retention of wealth? I mean, are you a precious metal guy? Or are you buying land? You're what?
Well, I really recommend that people pick up gold and silver whenever they can. The wonderful thing about silver is that a regular guy, who makes whatever, a number of hundred or $1,000 a week, on payday, he can take, $30, $60, $100 and buy some silver coins and stack them up somewhere. Gold is
now
a little harder. Yeah, especially now. Gold is a little harder. It's, $1,400, $1,500, $1,800 per pop. Most of us don't have that on payday. But $50 we can handle.
Just keep
stacking it.
If I known now what I didn't know then, I know now, I'm going, wow, I would have bought a lot more silver. I mean, I started accumulating when it was like 13. I should have been getting it when it was 3.
I know. You look back at the old price and you go, oh, man, if I would have just had any cents back when it was $4.
I know a lot of these guys, they go, man, but it went down. It's 22. I'm going, 22? Hell, man. I'm still good. That just means I get to buy more. I'm good.
Absolutely.
Paul, we're not done by any stretch of the imagination. So what we're going to do is Donna's going to contact you, and we'll have you on within the next month. I know, probably we're both very busy. We'll work it out. We'll get you back on, and we'll spend some more time. Because this is, we need more Pauls, okay? It is freemansperspective.com. He's a friend of a lot of our regular friends, and I'm glad to, introduce ourselves and him to you. And let's go ahead and keep the conversation going, because this is where we're going. The future is very bright. And once we break out of this thing, it's going to skyrocket. We're going to go hockey stick in our lifestyle. And what's the capacity of every individual on this planet? You watch.
From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear. I'll tell you, somebody that, you know, man, if he's not in the crosshairs, he should be. You know, Mr. Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope. I mean, you start going through the history and stuff that he's resurrecting of the guys doing. I just watched a Edward Griffin interview that he did, and I'm like, there's a lot of stuff the bad guys just assume you not know, you know? And it gets to, and we're talking to Paul in the last hour. I was like, you know, he made the comment that, you know, you don't have to be super uber duper intelligent. Just, you know, if you got a clean operating system, you know, thou shalt not aggress. Leave me aloneist, you know, and whatever. I mean, everything that clears your mind of so much mind fog. Well, Richard's going to fog us up, man. I mean, there's so much stuff that I knew we needed 2 hours. We've had Richard on before. He's such a great resource resurrecting all of this information to convince us that we should ignore them. Now, you know, I know that he'll go, no, you can't ignore them because, man, look, they got the plan. They're very detailed in exactly what they're going to do and how and why and when, and here we go. And I tell you what it's like. To me, it's like Kokesh or Oath Keepers. All they go outquitted amongst each other. Each one's not doing it right. Well, I don't care. You know, my thing is that by battling these guys, you know, on their turf, you go to the RNC and you're protesting. Ooh, we want whatever, and they just bring out the orange netting and they just wrap you up and put you under a bridge. You know, they arrest you and do. You know, yeah. What are you gonna do? Show me they're really, really, really bad. I get it. Okay, now what? Well, the thing is that once you know that they're bad, then what? Find out they're even more bad? So I kind of pass that, but it's great to have this resource so that the next generation coming up knows they're bad and how bad they are. But once you get to that realization, do you ever graduate? Are you forever analyzing these guys? You give them too much credit. You give them too much of your mind. You give them too much of your time, and you're not going off and doing it. And what I'm going to try and do with Richard, he and I are going to go back and forth on this, and we're going to, you know, the value of what he does. But I'm at what point do you go with all this energy and you say, okay, all this archive, they've accomplished it. They've done it. They got all the interviews. Don't keep adding, I'm sure. But he's doing, working hard, getting caught up. And this is a fantastic resource. Tragedy and Hope and a lot of the other sites and subscriptions that they have and so on, where you get access to this information. You need to have access to this information. But then what? That's what we'll talk about. Richard Grove, thanks for coming on, man. I know you're gonna counter everything I just said, but I mean, I need you to go ahead and tell people what it is that you're doing and accomplishing in making sure all of this lost information, or would soon be lost in a digital age now, is being accumulated, and how you select the people and the information that you think we all need to know.
Well, good morning, Ernie. Good morning to everyone listening. What I would start with is, I agree with you. Ignoring them is the conclusion, but what we have to do is also communicate to people how we came to that conclusion step by step. And what you're doing when you look at the media we're creating, whether it's Ernie's media or my media, is I'm sharing my five senses of observation. This is what I see. This is what I've heard. Here's the evidence I can collect. You then go through a process of identifying those pieces of evidence and finding out if there's any contradictions. You then organize it and you remove the contradictions, and then you communicate it. And that's your end result. That's where you ignore them. So the communication in this part is once you understand that government is there to divide and conquer and that it's a collectivist system versus an individualist system, once you understand the gravamen of the history and you can clearly communicate it to others so that they can do likewise, then you can ignore them in your personal life. But you always have the job of reminding people about history and how it continues to repeat until we learn from it. And particularly in the past several weeks with all these scandals, you see a lot of history that is repeating that goes all the way back to Watergate. And so it begs the question, well, what was Watergate all about? What do we know today, 40 years later, and how do we move forward? So that's why I interviewed John Rappaport in addition to G. Edward Griffin, because I'm trying to organize these things for myself so I can go forward and make decisions and judgments in my life with, with clarity and certainty and get the results I expect. And I think that's what a lot of individuals are seeking to do for themselves. And that's why I share the process of what I learn along the way.
No, I think it's great that you do that. I really do. But I tell you what I always steeled my mind against, or I kind of careful about, is that I see people that do, they see it as they create an organization, and all of a sudden the organization becomes more important than the reason they created it. You know, it's kind of like it's, you know, other talk show hosts or other people that are influential or get this information. It becomes a continuous regurgitation of the same thing, and it's like this fear state of mind kind of. It's like you're dazzled, you're baffled by the lights. You're a deer caught on the road, and there's all this doubt and fear that keeps being done. I'm going, look, no, this is, I need this information, but what's the solution? You know, I mean, if I don't have, you know, that I'm the solution, or learn that I just need to know, okay, they're bad, what's good? I mean, if you don't do that, then you're just standing on the road and become roadkill. So I'm wondering, you know, like you say, you're building up to, you know, individual decision and action, and you're sharing your process that you've gone through with everybody, which I think is great, and you do a great job, by the way. You know, but I'm going, okay, what's the ultimate goal? Is to be a better fighter in the ring, or to be out of the ring? I mean, you know, what is your ultimate goal? What are you looking to accomplish?
Well, first you got to know what the ring is and what the game is. You can't effectively resist until you understand what's going on. And that's when you can remove yourself from the system. So to go to call back to your first hour interview with Paul Rosenberg, it's not look how bad they are. It's not that at all. It's look how much potential we have.
Thank you.
That we can actually go through the process of a little self-discipline, reprioritize our time, reformulate our habits in such a way that it's in a voluntary nature and it's copacetic with everybody else around us who wants to just get along in life. And that really cuts off the proverbial 1% from our power through the money system. But that starts with the belief. It starts with the trust. Right. And so the difference between the serfs and William Wallace was he lost trust in the system. He saw that the system was abusive. He saw that it creates artificial stresses, which isn't part of evolution. It's part of eugenics. And it creates a population where we're insecure, afraid, and full of fear. Well, in order to have self-esteem and self-reliance, you have to have self-confidence, and you have to have something of substance about yourself. And that, in my opinion, is being able to interact with reality in such a way that you can sift out the knowledge and discard the noise in this, you know, and remain with the signal. And so it takes a lot of unindoctrination to outdo what they've done to us through the education system, as John Taylor Gatto points out.
You know, it's amazing to me to see how much you revere John Taylor Gatto. And I've known people like this for, God, 20 years. When I first became kind of, you know, awake or, you know, libertarian going down that road, I had John Taylor Gatto's stuff thrown on me. I mean, you wouldn't believe. They were like, Ernie, you got to. So I'm going, okay, I get it. You know, he's like, wow, this was done on purpose. And so I'm really glad. And we've had him as a speaker at the Freedom Summit and so on. I know John, you know, we'll ask you about his health when we come back. But I'm really glad that you were able to digitize and document a lot of the stuff that he had with your fresh perspective of this next generation. Because if that wasn't done by someone with the passion that you have, the essence of what he was and the influence he had on our generation would be lost, I think. And I'm so glad that you did that. More with Richard Grove, tragedyandhope.com, when we come back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800. 2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud, which now voices can be heard.
You're fighting against. I mean, damn. You know, that, and that I just watched. Yeah, you know, Richard, I did watch the interview you did with Edward Griffin, and I've spent some time with Edward before, and we got to talk, and I get it. You know, but I tell you, you know, his conclusion. He goes, man, from the beginning of time, this is what it's always been. It's been individualism versus collectivism, and I'm like, thank you. You know, I'll be blah 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 blah. It's individualism versus collectivism. Yeah, but we got in this and this guy did, and they, you know, came together too, and they voted and had a little, you know, secret meeting and handshake and did, and, you know, manned this thing and got the shiny badge of and whatever, and kind of, yeah, blah, 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 individualism versus collectivism. And my problem is that there's always this leaning towards, you know, and even Edward said it. He goes, you got to get the bad guys out of these positions of power and replace them with good guys. And I'm like, you still have the positions of power. That's the problem. I'm like,
I got you. I feel you, dude. But, you know, the history series is more like that's me trying to bridge the gap between what we get and what like other people in our families or friends don't get yet. And so bit by bit, I'm just trying to lay out these general pieces, you know, collectivism versus the individual. It is the story of history. At one point, Griffin says conspiracies are the engine of history. I need some people in my life to see that, you know, coming across from somebody that they see and respect, you know, they've got has some gray hair on their head, because when they hear it from me, they're like, oh, you're just my nephew or whatever. And they don't get it. And these are people who are losing their lives to ill decisions, GMOs and all the rest of the things that we're not educated to protect ourselves against as individuals. And so, you know, it's more about, you know, it's not about the messenger. It's about the message. And I think if we just take all the people out of it and look, what are they saying? Wow, there's this thing that's been going on and these people are organized and they seem to plunder and destroy our production. And in order to recognize who are the good guys and who are the bad guys, you have to identify what is at the philosophical root of what makes these people take action in such a way that it's antithetical to our needs for survival. Right. And so I'm just trying to take the audience through a slower version of that, because what I've put out in the past is cognitively dense. It's made to lengthen your attention span, because everybody's thinking in sound bites. And in order to get to the truth so you can understand and take action and resist effectively, it takes more time than they've entrained our minds to take in. So by laying all this stuff out, not hearing it from me, but hearing it from the primary sources where I'm doing my research and getting my information, and then having a discussion about it in our community, we're each building our immune systems. And that's what it's about. When you talked with Paul Rosenberg, you were talking about memes and mental viruses and the use of words to control human beings, social control. Population control is not about the numbers. It's about control of the minds and bodies of the people on the planet. And so these artificial stresses that are there, these memes, these egregores would be the technical term when you look into the nature of social control and the use of words to control people. It's a type of spelling. It's a type of use of words to make you believe things that are not true so that they can take your rights through your non-resistance to the servile nature of our culture today. And it's only going to get worse until we all start to think our way out of it. No one can do it for us. So we really have to strengthen this muscle in our mind that is the individual voluntary nature of our existence.
You know, I can look at it was John Taylor Gatto. You know, it's my first exposure to the concept of public education. It was from his you could probably tell the story better than me, but it was, I think, the second time he won the New York Teacher of the Year award. He gives the presentation, his speech, and kind of I break with thee. And as I got to know John later on and interviewing him and so on, I started to realize he wasn't originally a teacher. I mean, he went back from business into teaching and came at it different and go, whoa, this is jacked up. You know what? We're not going to do it this way. And then they go, wow, you're the greatest teacher ever. And he goes, you know why? Because I don't do it your way. You know, so this is, I can see when he started to expose that the whole public school system, this government school system, was set to make good little Prussian soldiers. I mean, that was the point. And I'm going, wow. And then you have all you got to do is convince the people that that's a good point. Yeah, no. We need good, you know, leaders and soldier followers and, you know, people for the regime and the empire. Oh, okay, well, that sounds reasonable. You know, why did that sound reasonable? Or did most of the people not even hear it, know it, care about it? They're off doing their lives and all of a sudden, you know, it's fear and they're going to come get us in war. You know, and then they just keep doing that. But what's changed? Information. The internet, communication. That's why I was interested with Paul going, look, man, he's about my age. He came up understanding, you know, the power of the internet and the ability of fiber optics to vastly, cheaply send communication ones and zeros around the planet, and the world will change. And it's going to be very, very nice, I am sure. But we're going to go through a zombie apocalypse, World War Z or whatever that's a coming. And it's by design. The bad guys are doing, man, they want a really bad. They'll be okay. The rest of us are screwed. And that's one of the benefits of Richard Grove doing what you're doing. So, Richard, tell me. I mean, let's skip to the end, man. Is there something that we need to be worried about? They got a plan for us?
I think their plan's already in effect. And the thing you need to be worried about is the fact that your individuality and your curiosity and your instincts of how to live have been, you know, extinguished by a public schooling system that spends 15,000 hours convincing you that government's not your enemy. It's not, you know, that it's not a gangster. You know, the only difference between the mob and the government is the mob doesn't have a 15,000 hour indoctrination system to convince you it's not the mob. And so in comparing the man versus the message with John Taylor Gatto, for instance, the man was born around Pittsburgh, where I'm from Western Pennsylvania. So I kind of related as I read his books about his upbringing, because he's a naive kid from Western Pennsylvania who excels scholastically. He goes to, you know, Columbia and Cornell. So he's in an Ivy League kind of mentality, and he gets into advertising, and then he figures out he's selling his soul. So he's like, I'm going to, you know, do something worthwhile with my life. He gets into teaching, and, you know, I'm still friends with him and I email with him, you know, pretty regularly. And he's sending me stories now about his first weeks in teaching. And I can't believe that he remained a teacher after witnessing these events in the school system, but he was told that's just the way it was. So many years later, after excelling in a broken system and being used to advertise a broken system, he figures out he's an unwitting dupe. And what he discovers, so that's the man that's bringing you this message. I like to focus on what the message is. The message is our school system, our public school system in America was purposely changed to take out the self-esteem, self-reliance, and self-confidence out of individuals to make a population that is bred away from liberty, where they could redefine our terms, redefine liberty as tyranny, and we all accept tyranny as, you know, that's a great thing because they call it liberty. And so what he's showing us is that the individual minds of, you know, of kids could be easily controlled through this system to create soldiers who want to create an empire. And people say, well, America is a free country. We're not part of an empire. Well, then you should go back and do your homework and check out the Rothschilds and Cecil Rhodes and the creation of an Anglo-American empire where they wanted to merge Britain and America. That's the CFR.
We'll go ahead and talk. I remember when the CFR was being discussed in early 90s, going to the Breakfast Club. It's been around 40-something years that we do. Got another one coming up this Saturday. You know, talk about CFR. Oh, you conspiracy? That doesn't exist. Really? Why would you even say that? We'll find out.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Propagandy, propagandy. If you want to fool the folks, it comes in handy. If you want to tell some lies, pull the wool over their eyes. You can do it with propagandy, propagandy, propagandy. You can liberate the babies from their candy.
Yeah, you can liberate the babies from their candy. Yep, you can do just about anything you want with some propaganda. Yep, 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 yep. Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. And what do we want to do? You can counter it. You know, with truth. You know, how do you unlearn the truth? You know, I don't know. You know, a few years ago, I was talking with a friend, and I could see what's coming. Like, we did wallet voting back in 03, walletvoting.com. Yeah, we did the silver thing. I could see it, because sooner or later, it's going to come down to what you do with your money. So that became a, you know, special edition that we did, and we, you know, go get the domains kind of thing. Well, I got another domain. The future. The kids. The next. Defending them from. They don't need a program or anything. They just need to be insulated from all this crap. So I started thinking about the stories of Archimedes. You know, here's a guy, you know, thousands of years ago, and just, you know, he comes up with, you know, pie in his head. I mean, he's one of those guys, big brain boxing, just kind of, you know, do it in his head. And I'm going, you know, defendingarchimedes.com or net, whatever. So I'm going, defending Archimedes. What is our goal? I don't need a program for him. I just need to defend him from the state. Just let these smart kids just be left alone, as opposed to what? Like Firefly and Serenity, they're going after a river. You know, we need to take all the smart people and put them in service of the state. And Eisenhower warned us of that. Everybody keeps going on about his military-industrial complex speech and everything. Now, that was a side effect of being ruled by a technological scientific elite. That's what he was warning us of. He's going, look, they're taking all the brightest minds of this country. It might as well have been the Soviet freaking Union. China. You know, they want to find the great athletes. What do? They put everybody here. Stand on this balance beam at 2 years old, and we'll see which one of you is going to go to the Olympics. I mean, you think they're not doing the same thing? Well, got to have the testing. Got to test you. It's like the last starfighter, man. They got to get you up there. Ooh, the high score goes and works for the man. I mean, you think that's not happening? Of course it's happening. Why? Why? What's their goal? What's the purpose? They have a story I'm trying to find on it was on Freedom's Phoenix yesterday. All you guys, you know, email me with it and I can find it. I got to look, you know, talk to Richard. But I tell you, it was a story about they took 12-year-olds in Britain, you know, these young kids of, you know, prominent families, all boys. And they said, look, here's the situation. There's been a riot. A couple of police officers are killed. You send in the troops and you kill 25 protesters. And we need a speech from you justifying why it was necessary to kill 25 people. Write the essay speech. Oh, and you're being tested. Oh, and this is whether you get a scholarship to go and whatever, and you'd be one of us. I'm like, man, and to think this is new? Hell no, this isn't new. This is what they do. This is how they, you know, they select tyrants for the future. This is, you know, so I go to Richard because I know his studying of all that. He's got 5 gazillion examples of this kind of thing. I am sure. Help me out, Richard. I'm sure you do. Does that ring, you know, kind of familiar in a lot of levels?
Well, the indoctrination of our children for the purposes of defending the state, I mean, that's a long history. But in the last 100 years or so, I mean, you've got Rhodes scholarships that are given out so that you can excel and you can go over and become, you know, part of the empire and then come back to the United States and help build out the Anglo-American establishment. And so, you know, when they have a method of plunder and they're taking the best and brightest, or, you know, as I found out, the people with so-called lower IQs are in many ways smarter than people with higher IQs because they're quicker to realize the BS of the indoctrination, the collectivist nature. I mean, basically, to have a high IQ in our society, it says you are servile and malleable and you can, you know, you are a good defender of the state and we're going to, you know, prioritize your life in society so that you can, you know, rise in this class system, which we've inherited from Britain many years after the revolution, because the empire never forgets. And through incrementalism, they're able to, change our culture back to the standards where it's almost, you know, like you said with Paul Rosenberg in the first hour, it's almost worse than, and you know, being under a monarchy, because at least there'd be one person responsible and there'd be, you know, prime motive would be, you know, expansion of the empire and profit. And you don't see that today. What you see is just, you know, power and corruption and greed run amok. And it is facilitated, as Etienne Delabuete said, by the, you know, the voluntary servitude of the population. And but you cannot resist effectively and ignore this whole situation, or let alone help your friends and family ignore it, without getting in touch with the reality that they've hidden from us. And that reality, you know, in my opinion, you know, starts with a central banking empire who then decided to focus its interests through Cecil Rhodes to create the world's most famous and, you know, successful thus far secret society that has prime agendas that created working groups like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Pilgrim Society, the Bilderbergs, the Trilateral Groups, all these different working groups. So these people have no problem understanding the agenda. It's clearly communicated among themselves. They're all working for collectivism to break up the American nation, to change our values. And they do that by changing our behavior, our thoughts, and our reactions through the school system. And so that gets back to the message of John Taylor Gatto. And for instance, pointing to his message in Chapter 9 of The Underground History of American Education, he has a whole chapter on the scientific dictatorship, using examples where Bertrand Russell's calling for world government and the control of individuals through inoculations and injections. He's breaking down Zbigniew Brzezinski. So, it escaped me for the first couple years, his message, because it's a different kind of education he's providing us with. And then later, after doing all this historical study, I started to see Gatto's name come up with all these searches. And I'm like, the same people that are controlling our culture, that are controlling our State Department, that are controlling our diplomacy, are the same people forcing eugenics through GMOs. They're the same foundations that corrupted our education system. And in learning about this through the book Tragedy and Hope, which I learned about from Griffin, so that's why I wanted to interview him and break it down and get into Norman Dodd and the Rees Committee and how these tax-exempt foundations have been going without any resistance, and they're feeding themselves off of our unwitting, unresisting nature. And this is what has really shaped the culture of America in the 20th century, unbeknownst to almost everybody that I know. So, I do what I can to spread that word.
Well, I found I'm glad you're doing it, too. And this just reinforces this. When is this? This is 25th of May this year. I mean, it's just a few days ago. It was Daily Mail, .co.uk. And I got it. It's on the front page, and it was called something else. But it's from England. They're talking about this. We got it Daily Mail Online, and it's from Lou Rockwell's blog site where we found this. And here it goes. No wonder why they think they are born to lead the country. Eton schoolboys told to imagine themselves as future prime ministers. More than a dozen Eton pupils have made the journey from the prestigious public school all the way to Downing Street. David Cameron became the 19th old Etonian to be elected prime minister in 2010. Many of the close political allies, blah, blah, blah. And this is what they told him to do. A question on a paper set by 12-year-old pupils in 2011 gives a telling glimpse into how Eton fosters ambition in its students from an early age by asking them to imagine they are running the country. Now, what they did is they gave them a situation. They said, the year is 2040. There have been riots because, of course, this is about when they're probably going to be, in positions of power. And the year is 2040. There have been riots in the streets of London after Britain has run out of petrol because of an oil crisis in the Middle East. So we got to go kill Muslims and so on. So students are asked to imagine that protesters have attacked public buildings, that policemen have been killed. Consequently, the government has deployed the army to curb the protest. 25 protesters have been killed by the army. It goes on. You are the prime minister, the paper says. Before instructing the young Etonians to draft a script for a speech to be broadcast to the nation explaining why deploying the army was both necessary and moral. And it goes on. But the point is, they're using this mechanism as a way to select who has the temperament and the desire to rule and justify the state because of threats to the state. Whatever the justification, read whatever, doesn't matter. Why the state needs to protect it, not the individual. Oh, you're prime minister material. This has been going on for a long time, chronicled by Richard Grove.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
William Wallace, you stand in taint of high treason.
Against whom?
Against your king. Have you anything to say?
Never in my whole life did I swear allegiance to him.
It matters not. He is your king. Confess, and you may receive a quick death. Deny, and you must be purified by pain. Do you confess? Do you confess? Then on the morrow you shall receive your purification.
Yep. It matters not. He is your king. I mean, that's your starting point. You know, he pulled Excalibur from the rock, and therefore, and this guy with the pointy hat said, so, you know, you're ruled and under him and property and livestock. Get over it. And I'm going, wow. So what do we have? We found the story, and it is, it was done in the mail. And you go on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix. It is there. It says, what the elite look for in tomorrow's leaders. And what they did is they get these 12-year-olds to, you know, imagine themselves as the prime minister and justifying why we're going to kill people because they didn't like the government. So I'm like, wow. And I bet, you know, you see these guys, they'll be peppering the bureaucracy, you know, 30 years from now. So I'm going, okay. So I'm just like, you know, Richard, does this ring any bells with you?
Well, what rang a bell was you can't fault the king. The king is a known known. He acts like that. In my opinion, why Wallace got stretched on Iraq is because there was apathetic people who stood by and tolerated that act and didn't use their mass numbers. They all felt broken as individuals because in their minds, the state is legitimized and the king had his divine right to do that. So getting back to the story about Eaton, you're talking about the propaedeutic function, the preparing of the next leadership class, as John Taylor Gatto talks about in the Ultimate History Lesson. I think it's hour 4 or 5. When he's saying this is one of the 6 objectives of primary of public education, they want to identify the future leadership class and teach them how to dehumanize other individuals using words. What did they want those kids to write? They said, we need your naive minds to use your power of words to put a spell over the audience. And will they believe that it's okay to do this, right? So who is Eaton? What is this place called Eaton? If you want to humor me for a minute, go to tragedyandhope.com, and in the top menu, you'll see a tab called the brain. Click on something called the Rothschild model, and under there or above there, you can see Eaton. You can click into this, and if you pull up the Wikipedia page from that model, you'll see that this is the training area of many future and past leaders, people like George Orwell, Ian Fleming, Jacob Rothschild.
Monty okay, now wait a minute. Norman, I'm on Tragedy and Hope. Where am I going?
Top menu. Yep. And it's it says the brain. And then there's drop down models. And you can click into the bottom model called Rothschild.
Rothschild model. Okay. At the very top of the page, it says the brain. I go and Rothschild model. Okay. So tell me what I'm learning here.
There's also a search box at the bottom left-hand corner, so you can put in any of these terms like Eaton College and pull it directly up. And what it is it's connecting all these different informational sources. So for ubiquity, I use Wikipedia, but I don't trust what Wikipedia tells me in the page. I dig into the primary sources listed in the references at the bottom, and then I cross-check those. But for sake of public access, I use Wikipedia pages because it gives you, you know, general information that you can use to dig deeper. And when you model these things out, like, you know, who are famous people that went to Eton College? How did they come about by King Henry VI? And what does King's College, Cambridge do? You know, it's a feeder system for the upper class system in Britain. And so in trying to understand different characters through history or different subjects, I deposit them in this database, which is a visual database, and you can see the connections. And so it helps me to learn and understand because, you know, it's simple enough. If I don't know, I can just click the icon. It brings up the Eaton College page and you can see, wow, this is not your average school. They don't teach you the same things at this private elite school level where, you know, princes and kings come from. They don't teach you the same things as, you know, public school 169. Right. And so what you're understanding now is that there is a stratified system within our country created through the education system that is mimicking the model that Britain has used successfully to run its empire over the centuries, and that they've been anglifying or, you know, making English a primary objective in America instead of being an American. And America was founded on very different principles than how the empire in Britain runs. And this is basic 1776 101. I think a lot of people in your audience get this, but it's our friends and family and coworkers and other people in this country who are apathetic, who are just blindly, you know, taking action without putting thinking back in between the stimulus and response. And without that thinking, you don't have the space for freedom between your ears. And that's where the revolution is, as you know.
Well, I can see what's different, though. I mean, think about it. You know, I guess a lot of people that aren't at least 50 or so, don't remember what it was like. I mean, you go through the 60s and you have the racial issues that were, you know, prominent, but it was not really argued by a lot of people, certainly in the media, until it became obvious and everybody understood that it was an individual right thing, that the whole promise and purpose of government was to have equality under the law, and they saw an opportunity to shift it to just being equality by law. And
well, I think, you know, first off, I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm going to lose this thought if I don't. The law is a use of words to control human resources, and the law may or may not reflect reality. And so what you're talking about, moving away from reality, is where we get the dehumanization of other people. And this is where you're bridging it back with that article that you're talking about, because they're asking those kids in their minds to dehumanize these people because they live on the other side of an imaginary line. And don't look at the evidence. Don't look at any evidence.
Or why.
Don't use your five senses for yourself. Just understand the logic that the state is putting down, and you'll be under perfect mind control. And so let's talk about the history of Britain and dehumanization. We, as a country in America, did not kill civilians in war through bombing until the British firebombed Germany. And then after that, we're like, okay, it's okay to do Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And today we have Gitmo and do, you know, drone strikes all over the world as a justification of preemption that came from the British Empire. That's not American foreign policy. That's not American diplomacy. That is Anglified through the foundations who took control of the State Department, our politicians, the lobbyists, and primarily through our education to make people docile and apathetic and not to react to these changes in our culture.
I can see the map, the mechanism by which they did this. See, I remember reading, it kind of surprised me, how few American soldiers, even in World War II, even fired their weapons. Or they would intentionally miss or shoot high or what, they just didn't have it in them to kill. And it didn't, and they were going, man, this Prussian school indoctrination system
didn't work well. You know, they're like, what could be useful to indoctrinate our individuals to be killing machines for the empire? And this comes back to Eisenhower and his, you know, famous military industrial complex speech. But basically what you're seeing in delivering that speech to the people is an edited version of some thoughts that Eisenhower wished to express. And who is Eisenhower? Look Eisenhower up in that brain model. You'll see he's part of psychological warfare operations working with Nelson Rockefeller, who was also in psychological warfare operations working with C.D. Jackson, who was also in psychological warfare operations working with William Paley, who was also in psychological warfare operations, right? So these media moguls, these people that are in our culture, highly respected like Eisenhower, dig into what his job was in World War II and why he became president, who supported him for president. That's the history we need to know, because you'll never get the fact that, you know, the people who bring you that message of the military industrial complex, yes, that's one major part of the budget and taxation and change in America over the past 100 years, but they're neglecting to mention the power of influence of Walter Lippmann and Edward Bernays through propaganda of the media controlled by the state, which is controlled by central bankers at this point in history in the 21st century. And it's this scientific dictatorship where they use pragmatism, again, as John Taylor references in The Ultimate History Lesson, which is a philosophy of the ends, you know, justify the means, that there is no objective truth and justice in the world. It is what strong people say it is, to quote Oliver Wendell Holmes, a Supreme Court Justice of the United States, pragmatist. Mm-hmm. And I believe he's a graduate of Harvard.
You know, one thing I wanted to make sure when we come back in the next hour, people have to look forward to, is that you're talking about Eisenhower's speech was edited. And there you have the original and even spoken to some of the original speech writers or people that knew him or something. We'll get into the details of that, because I had no idea there was more to that speech that they cut. And I'm wondering, when we come back, I'm going, okay, so was Eisenhower having a crisis of conscience? Was he, you know, damn, man, it's a lot worse than I thought. I want to share this with you. Be warned, I'm leaving, but damn, don't blame me, because damn, I had no idea, damn. Or, you know, and what did they cut and why? And what would you see? So there's a lot more that's been going on for a long time. And if you can get it crystallized and distilled down into a couple of really good videos or maybe 20 hours of tragedyandhope.com. Oh, and you look at these maps that just has all the links and the interactive kind of whatever. Oh, the bad guys didn't want to see this. Nope. It wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. Richard Grove, more when we come back.
And now, live
from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear. See, that shortcut, bypass, next. Okay, we're still here. And here doing what? You know, they, them, those. Are those just want to be left alone? Those won't leave you alone? That's it. You know, which one are you? Blah, 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 blah. But I'm like, and them what? 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 I tell you what our them what is. We're just going to, there was a TED Talk, a gentleman in South Central L.A., he's like, starting to just, wherever there's open space, just growing food. You know, he's in the black community, he's doing, hey, you ain't gangsta unless you're growing food, because growing food is like printing money. Woo-hoo, what happens when you get that in the mind of Generation Next? What happens when you're able to produce as a family? Of four. You have young families raising. They're John Bush and Catherine Bleich on the Blush Farm already doing this kind of thing. You know, I'm encouraging my daughter-in-law, my daughters, my sons. I'm going, look, think about it. If you can produce your own food, oh my goodness, biodiesel, algae generating, we're putting out here in an aquadome thing. Just Google aquadome. Aquadome, and you'll see what we're doing out here. I go, we can demonstrate that one of the mom or dad, one of the spouses, stay home, educate your kids, teach them about growing food, teach them about, the things that they need to know and how I'm being good and ally yourself with other homeschoolers doing whatever, what happens? The second income, you don't have somebody going out there paying all the taxes that's supporting the beast that's devouring you to begin with. The daycare, how much does that cost? How much are you losing in medical problems and your productivity and health care you got to have because you're eating crap, the slave slop that they're giving you, the GMO stuff. We'll get into that, too. I'm sure Richard has a comment on that. And we're going to go ahead and just demonstrate, what the economics are of providing for yourself. Not only can you, the technology is there and the energy. What happens when you go solar? And you grow your own food, then what? How are you serving the man then? How much money you're extracting from them? How much control are you taking from them? How much ability you have them to, control your mind with chemicals and so on? How much? I don't know. But we're going to find out. That's the now what. Now what? I'm the now what. Now, Richard promised me that he would get, this Eisenhower thing. There was more to the speech that was televised that had a big influence on me. I did not know that. There was more to that, and it kind of had something to do with the media, and they kind of cut that out, and so I get more history. We go to Richard Grove. Help me out, Richard, from tragedyandhope.com. What are you going to add to that?
Hey, before we get into Eisenhower, I wanted to comment on what you just said about food and urban gardening and growing our own food and being self-sustaining and self-reliant like Americans should be. My question is, why don't we already have that? Why didn't we grow up into a culture that had that? Like, how did we, you look around and everyone's got this manicured yard that's all green grass and they've practiced eugenics by spraying a bunch of poison on the yard to get rid of anything that's not this exact type of grass at this exact type of height, right? So we've poisoned our greatest food supply, on our property, the potential. We just, people spray poison and they pay to have that poison sprayed. And where does this history of green grass and cutting it like this come from? That's British Empire in India, where they used to use slaves, which are, people who, came under rule of somebody who was dominant and a tyrant, who were like using scissors and knives to manicure these fascinating lawns. And a sign of wealth back then was, I can have so much land and not have to grow my own food on it because I'm a tyrant. So in America, in the 20th century, this becomes very popular. We, you know, spend a lot of time manicuring our yards and everyone's trying to make everything look artificial. And what is this that we're all participating in unwittingly? It's, you know, if you knew the history, you wouldn't be so apt to just go out there and spend hours on your lawn when you could be doing something useful for your family, for yourself, for your friends, because it's only once you understand these ironies and these tricks that are being played through culture, which is based on using words to control people, that you can get to the bottom of this. Now let's get into Eisenhower. Who is, so when I investigate any of these events, it's like, who is Dwight D. Eisenhower? And since I have to, you know, at some point refer to this later for myself, I put it in a model. And since that model can be put online for other people to click through, I find it useful because, you know, other people can follow along. They can download the software, make their own models of their own understandings. But it's a useful communication source for people who are actually interested. And what you find is, you know, Eisenhower is not the pristine president of the post-war period that you think he is. He was there to help implement a bunch of programs, but he's compartmentalized. He's a military guy. He's not someone who had the opportunity of an Eton and Cambridge and Oxford education. He's a guy who went and got used in a compartmentalized way, who witnessed the death, which is a murder when you investigate it, of General Patton. So, you know, if the people who didn't go along with the psychological operations didn't come home. And the fact that he came home and surrounded himself with other psychological warfare operators of the media variety, and the fact that the media is never mentioned in his speech, and yet it's the medium of media that brings you this warning of the military-industrial complex, which can always be justified by fear. But you can never justify the media-industrial complex through fear. It's just outright outlandish. It's insane the way that the state and the banking interests can control every single major mouthpiece in this country to make every single person emotionally react to information without ever thinking, wow, I really need to look at the evidence for myself and see what evidence is out there to ascertain. And if you find that the scene is being controlled and the reporting is being controlled and the investigation is being controlled, those are hallmarks of psychological warfare operations. And the strategy of the Pentagon is info war includes assassinations. So that's the level of operations we're talking about when we talk about Eisenhower to start with.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and, you know, talk about that. When you say compartmentalization, I mean, I'm not, you know, anybody that gets to be president of the United States, I don't think like a hero to begin with. But, you know, the point is I got the impression, correct me where I'm wrong, that speech that he gave was an attempt to try and clear his conscience or something. You know, trying this legacy or, man, don't blame me or, damn, I had no idea it was this bad or something like that. And then they take out part of what he wanted to say. So tell me, did he start trying to have a come to Jesus moment or something? Or what was going on? Why would he say the things that he did?
Well, I think he said the things that he did because he's a useful dupe because he wasn't getting to speak clearly and uncensored to his audience. He knew that he had to broker that information. And so I'm surprised that they televised as much as they did. But really, what effect did it have in America? Our military budget has escalated out of control ever since then. And fear was used to drive the Cold War because the Cold War was funded by the same people that were financing our White House. So I agree and not, you know, admiring any of these presidents. They are the heads of corporations that are used to control other people's resources and plunder and destroy in the name of innocent individuals who have been unwittingly for 200 years, we've all been paying into this system into one way or another. And so it's a huge misapplication of human intelligence and human resources that goes most of the time unnoticed. Because people believe too much of what they hear.
What was taken out of his speech? What was taken out?
I don't have the exact information on what was taken out. That actually came up yesterday. Maria Heller brought it up yesterday when I was doing an interview with her. If I recall correctly, she had interviewed one of the authors of the speech who had spoken to her kind of as a whistleblower. I think she referenced it being like 13 years ago now on her show. But I would have to check more into that. What I can say is that from the biographies of other people that we can discuss after the break, they clearly are whistleblowers, so we can talk about that.
Yeah, no, I'm, you know, blow that whistle, man. I'm really glad that we have Richard Grove doing this kind of work for us because it's like, I don't know, one less thing we got to do. Because I really want to put my focus on the after. I really do believe there's going to be an after. Once you have this realization they're bad, then what?
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. And don't forget to visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Declare my independence. See how easy it was? No government form. It's no more complicated than that, and that's what they fear. They don't want you knowing that it's just a state of mind kind of thing. You know, I want to get into, we left it before, we're going to talk about some other whistleblowers, and, you know, was Eisenhower kind of, you know, wanting to cleanse his soul or something? I see a whole kind of, you know, we need to get some behind the scenes and see what and what built up to, and there's a lot of versions of that speech, and I did not know that. You know, I didn't know what was cut. It would be very interesting to see, have it highlighted, and they cut this. Why? What, the president get to, you know, talk as long as he wants? I mean, you know, especially in 61. Now, you know, nobody watches, but, you know, back then they probably did. So I'm going, okay. And there's others that have had crises of a conscience. They go, you know, I need to share so I can just go and retire and be, okay, yeah, I benefit from and I'm a scumbag, but, you know, maybe I'm not that bad a scumbag, or you give me a little bit of a leeway and the serfs won't come pitchfork and torch my house because I, you know, became a good guy at the last minute and my last breath kind of crap. So let's see if there's some other stories just like that. Richard, can you help me out? You know, is there other examples?
Well, again, to comment on what you just said, it's easy enough to ignore the system and to get what's going on. It's another thing to intellectually defend yourself and to move people off the fence so that you can gain more support locally. So if I were speaking to someone in Arizona who said, I don't believe anything that this guy's saying, I would want to relate to them with an example that, you know, that is familiar. So I would draw out something like, With No Apologies, an autobiography by the United States Senator, five-term senator from Arizona, also a libertarian named Barry Goldwater. And if you were able to go on, you know, some book source and get this used book, a couple dollars, and read just one chapter, this chapter will start your entire library, because what he's describing in chapter 33 are non-elected rulers. He says the non-elected rulers. So after he's been a senator, after he's been on the inside, he's disclosing his personal views on how the world works. And in the third paragraph, he said, after World War I, we could no longer remain isolationist. The changing times required us to become a participant in the world community of nations, right? So he's pointing towards world government in this agenda that's been going on. He goes on to say, scholars turned their attention to foreign affairs, which was also part of the Carnegie Endowment's role in the tax-free foundations of bringing about world government to merge our system with the Soviet system, which is about as opposite as you can get, and they could control this through the education system. He goes on to talk about the Paris 1919 Peace Conference, and out of that, Bernays and the other people that were there said, we need to have something, a mouthpiece for this world government idea. Let's call it the Council on Foreign Relations. And so Rockefeller interests, JP Morgan interests, which are all Rothschild banking family interests, created this mouthpiece, which has dominated our political agendas, our foreign affairs agendas. They even have a magazine called Foreign Affairs, where if you read it, you can pretty much predict the future of what they're going to do, because it's them talking amongst themselves. So that's why I find it so important to use literacy, not to be a slave, not to unquestioningly just take what they're saying, because literacy is a form of slavery until you start practicing a consistent method of discerning what exists and the ability to dismiss unrealities or contradictions. And once you have that, now you can learn, you know, learn for yourself. But you have to ask yourself this question, and learning starts with questions, right? Why are we taught how to read in this country, but we're not taught how to think, how to identify reality,
follow instructions,
and to find truth?
To follow instructions.
That's right. That's right. And so this idea is not new. It's been going on through history. But now with the science and technology that they've developed, you know, it's a combination of scientific dictatorship, the application of eugenics through GMOs and controlling our environment. I mean, basically, they have everyone living in terrariums, artificially controlled environments where you don't know where your food comes from, where you're not independent in any way. And it's a socialization, which is collectivism.
Oh, so that's a good way of putting it, that mind picture, word picture you put there. We're in terrariums. It's like the hamster goes to the bowl of the little water thing. It's like us going to the supermarket.
Okay, well, so let's take it one step further, right? Because William James, the great, you know, founder of psychology in this country at Harvard, and a pragmatist, right? He says that habit is the enormous flywheel of society. It's what keeps the farmer and people doing hard work in their place, and saves the children of fortune from the envious uprisings of the poor, right? So when you take in that one quote and you understand what that means, it does. It changes your state of mind, because now you see that what you have around you is an artificially created terrarium. You're being treated like an animal, and that the people who rule this planet have a very different way of looking at us than we look at ourselves.
My encouragement of a lot of the activists here, you know, you have, you know, a lot of people, Freedom's Phoenix, we've been very active, the Levolution thing. I have, you know, a lot of people we converse with and a lot of activism that we do. And they come to me and they said, Ernie, this politician's bad. This guy, we got a guy going, I don't know, sounds like voting to me. I mean, I don't have any interest in that. I go, you want to do something that has more of a cultural impact, I'm all over it. Why don't you go ahead and look at what this position, this authority is preventing or making, you know, that which isn't forbidden is required kind of thing. I go, let's look at some, you know, how the terrarium is being constructed, you know, for lack of a better term. It's this Agenda 21 thing. You know, I'm going, look, you know, the Soviet Union falls and they do Green Cross with Mikhail Gorbachev that gets, you know, melded into Rio de la, we control any and everything and food, eat what we give you kind of livestock. I mean, this is, it takes about 30 seconds to get the idea that, oh, I get it. We're just managed livestock. You know, how gilded our cage is doesn't make it any less a cage. Once you come to that realization, then all you got to do is kind of highlight it. And that's why we're doing the food thing, because we have the Valley Progressive Permaculture whatever guys on this side that we're working with. And then we have the Tea Party prepping survivalist, you know, oath-keeping guys on this side. And we're starting to see they're overlapping, and we can be that conduit. So we're going to have a big, giant, the Great Pumpkin Festival in October here on the farm, and have the kids come in and bartering and doing and kind of, and I know what's going to happen. Oh my goodness, these guys are starting to free their mind. They're going to start planting tomato plants in their front yard and stuff. And oh my God, we got it. There's going to be somebody something. We already know we're getting hammered by Monsanto. We got this thing called Jackalope Freedom Festival we do in the first weekend in August. They were promoting it at this Monsanto thing last Saturday. All of a sudden, they get the emails from the Forest Service. Oh, we understand you're going camping. You need a permit for that and your anarchist thing. So I interviewed some of the people from the Forest Service yesterday and get to their PR per. They started. They didn't like where that was going. So we're going to be talking more after the show today. And then I'll make that MP3 available and we'll put it up. But I tell you, I can see the power of exactly what you just said. It's not just a terrarium that's physical, that, you know, they got the little water bottle and they got the little feeder thing and they got, you know, and you're still in that cage. It's a prison for your mind. And when we come back, I want to, Richard, to go ahead and kind of, you know, what are some of the solutions? What's the antidotes? I mean the antidotes for the us being able to extract ourselves and to protect us, to insulate. You know, what's the antibiotics that we got to take? What, I mean, you know, for our mind. What is it we got to do to insulate ourselves? Can we just ignore them? Is that a way to do it? Can we just live our life? Or is there something we need to know? What is it?
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, let's take a break, kind of at least understand what's what. You know, and there's solutions and stuff, too. We need to understand the history. That's why, you know, I really feel so much better that Richard Grove, Tragedy and Hope, and his crew, that they're there. One less thing I got to do, because I need something else to do. You know, this is, and there's always been holes in my, you know, activism. There's only so much each one of us can do. And, you know, we probably, you know, round out a lot of the things that need to be done out there, just being an inspiration, demonstrating, go whip ass. But, you know, there's so much more that can be. There's such a tapestry that creates this warm blanket of understanding, you know, of action, of insulation against, you know, the bad guys, of protecting our youth's mind, the youths. You know, if we got them to where they can at least survive this thing that's coming. And how are you going to do that? I don't know, with our intellect. That's how human beings, that's what separates us from the other animals. I mean, we can, you know, contemplate the future. We can look into the future. And that's one thing that they had to kill. They have to kill imagination. If they weren't able to kill imagination, then I look at imagination as what it can be, or maybe even what it should be. And the exploration of imagination of youth and what they can accomplish and do. And where's my flying car? And the government's idea, or those that want to rule you using government, is to kill that imagination. They don't want you thinking of anything other than what they will provide and what status you get in that. You know, don't you want to be a shiny badge wearer in our status quo, de la whatever? If not, well, then you're part of them, or at least supporting. If you're against it, well, we just throw your ass in jail or kill you. You know, I mean, this is the messages that we get. But there are some people that are showing that, look, man, not only is this detrimental to our future, not only is this, you know, it's bad, it's wrong, it's whatever, there are solutions. And we can help you by understanding what's been done in the past and inspire for what's going to happen in the future. And it's only because of the digital communication that's available now with the internet, broadband video, being able to communicate directly with anyone across the planet and have it translated, you know, simultaneously as you're freaking typing. I mean, you know, this is amazing. Universal translators with speech. How they got on, you know, apps on phones now. I go, this man, the bad guys have no idea what's coming and who's helping people understand what their mission was. You know, accumulating all this past information, put it in one place, Tragedy and Hope, Richard Grove. In this final segment, we got one more segment after this, but I mean, in this last half hour, I want to kind of, you know, there's some solutions. There's you know, the antidotes to a lot of what's happening. Richard, help me out, man. What do you think's going to be needed?
Well, for what it's worth, I mean, you mentioned a flying car. There was a cat back in the 1800s who developed a flying car. His name's Ludwig of Bavaria. They called him crazy. They had him, you know, put in insane asylum. Then they drowned him because they were so threatened that this king could have a flying car to go to his 13 castles and control militaries and whatnot. And recently, in the past couple of years, they verified that his plans for a flying car would have actually worked, had a high percentage rate that it would have actually worked. So that's the type of world we're living in, where even if you came up with the greatest idea, it's going to be suppressed and snuffed out if you don't know the game that's being played. Therefore, you can change the game if you understand how it's played, but not until then. So you mentioned planning. Planning is necessary for human survival. That's why we have this capacity. You know, we are a little bit different, and we need to take those differences and see why they're suppressing our knowledge of history, which is necessary to our planning at any given time to see where we're going. If they can wipe out effectively our history, you know, Orwell talks about this in his book. Huxley talks about this in his book. Huxley's book was based on a Russian book called We by Yevgeny Zamyatin, which talks about cybernetics and social control and all the things that Huxley and Orwell described in English. These were described in the 1920s, right? So these were different populations undertaking change and different authors reflecting this out to an audience saying, hey, look, here's what's coming. We now live in a digital world that is controlled basically by cybernetics. Well, what's the origin of using, you know, this technology
to control and steer nations? Define cybernetics for me. Define cybernetics.
Okay, cybernetics is the art of steering nations, according to Plato in Book 6 of the Republic. You could take the 1843 definition from Michel Ampère or Bronislaw Trentowski, and it's, again, about controlling people and nations. Or you can take the 1920th century definitions from Bertrand Russell and Norbert Wiener, which is using, you know, control and communication of the human animal. Right, the manipulation of the human animal using technology. So the smart grid, Agenda 21, all these things overlap into a bigger agenda of using technology to control individuals called cybernetics. And when you see, when you look into the 20th century, you know, reignition of this idea that was only talked about in the past because we didn't have the technology to apply it. Russia had the calculations to use it on their population, but they didn't have the technology to implement it, according to Zbigniew Brzezinski. So what we're living in the technotronic age, that's the post-industrial age in Zbigniew Brzezinski's terms, for controlling human beings. And if you search cybernetics in his books, it's about using technology in this digitized world that he predicted in 1968 and 1970 in his books. So this has been unraveling or unfolding for a century, but now you're getting strong hit with it because all the things you're buying in stores are smart grid connected. They're tracking you using this technology, and you're surrounded by it. You know, Agenda 21 is to control the resources on the planet. Cybernetics is to control the human beings on the planet using technology. And so when you trace it back up to its origins, ARPA and DARPA were created out of Eisenhower's administration. So it goes from planning of psychological warfare and using media and industrial complex through force to controlling people implicitly through an electromagnetic gulag that has been set up here in America. And they get us to love our servitude and to spend our hard-earned money. And that's exactly what Aldous Huxley kind of warned us about in The Ultimate Revolution. He's like, whether or not he believed in those things or was an objective observer, he shared critical information like that comes from William Sargent's Battle for the Mind. You know, there's a battlefield between your ears that's going on. Call it info war, call it whatever. But it's a gap in communication where there's one group of people that are predators, plunderers, or destroyers. And that gap in information is what is allowing them to prey and plunder on us.
See, it's different for us here in Arizona only because I think there's been a very open discussion on such things over election cycles for 20-whatever years. And because there's a lot of us that have been, you know, we bring this stuff. We don't care about the vote total. You're still voting. We just use running for office so we can say all the stuff that you just said. We're like, look, man, you guys just need to know what's going on. Well, that has a cultural impact. I don't give a crap what the government does. They just want to jump in front of the parade and say, yes, we're for freedom too, and vote for us. So it's a cultural thing that changes. We have more homeschooling is I break with thee. I'm hoping schooling my kid and there's no permission slip. You just do it. You know, there's a lot more freedom in, you know, like home births, you know, midwifery. There's more freedom, unrestricted concealed carry here. There's all kinds of freedoms that we have that are a lot representative of the culture that was created here. So I'm not as fearful as probably maybe you are in New York. And I'm looking at, is there something that's more threatening to they, them, those in general? Is it the internet in general? Is it examples? It's just like when you got the nail that's sticking the highest, that's the one that gets hit. So what happens? Here comes Janet Napolitano being our governor. You know, how'd that work out for them? Probably not the way they thought, because we use it as a poster child for, you know, the problems. Then she goes be head of the Gestapo. What kind of difference did it make here? The people? Not much, you know, but the government, I'm getting, they're just a tool of they, them, those that fear the inspiration of Generation Next. They fear this understanding of what we're up against. They fear the solutions that we're starting to enact on our own. And Vipad, I don't need to beat them. I just need to survive them. I don't want to take over the positions of power.
I want to ignore the positions of power.
Maybe it'll go away.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock. In this final segment, I want to make sure that we get all the information where you should be going to get this fantastic tools that they have over at Tragedy and Hope. And, you know, the tools don't mean squat if you don't have it populated with all kinds of goodies in there for you to use and come to this realization. And I want to give Richard an opportunity to help us out and have us navigate all the stuff that he does. But I'm also looking, I mean, in the last segment, I'm like, you know, you're going to have a death of 1,000 cuts on the beast that's devouring us. You know, I need a couple of cuts. You know, give me some slashing, man. You know, where am I going to do? You know, a lot of times I don't need 1,000 cuts. I need one real good one on an artery somewhere. And I tell you where that's at. It's in our minds. We're going to space and government's not invited, but a lot of guys are going to take it with them anyway. It's all in our head. This idea that, well, you know, somebody's got to be in charge and rule and what. Oh, okay. Well, you guys go over there. I'm going to go over this way. So, you know, and there's going to be some kind of, governing of yourself and your friends and your family, whatever. But, you know, as long as it's not coercive. But I don't know how you can have a government that's not coercive. Because whenever you create an organization or institution, sooner or later, the institution becomes more important than the reason you created it. What was the promise? The promise, you were going, whatever government you're going to have, Declaration of Independence, you know, said, hey, you know, how do you recognize when they're bad? When they're violating individual rights, duty, right, alter, abolish. See my point? So I'm just going, all right. So then we get the Constitution, the plantation they put us on, and it starts from there. And it was way before then. And that's the kind of the information that you're getting from Tragedy and Hope. This has been a plan for a long time, how to manage the cattle to serve the parasites. All right. Well, can we be autonomous? You know, let's go ahead and do that. Richard, go ahead and provide the audience of, you know, how best to negotiate your site and sign up and be a part of what you can share with them.
Well, I mean, again, I want to comment on what you're talking about.
Of course you
do. What I foresee is billions of cuts, because what we want to cut is the fear. And the fear gets cut when you reinstall interest and curiosity, and that helps to build out your questioning of reality, which builds up your self-reliance and self-esteem. Right. And so my goal is just to help people set themselves free to be free. I don't want to tell them what to work on. Once they are free of this other system of thinking, they can do whatever they want. And I trust them to be free and not to, you know, violate other people's volition and to have a voluntary nature, because they're understanding for the first time possibly in their lives what's going on. That's what we do at TragedyandHope.com. We produce a video series called History So It Doesn't Repeat. It's easy for people to watch and pass around to their friends and family. I do a deeper curriculum called Peace Revolution, which lays out these ideas in detail from the primary sources from which I'm learning. And then we talk about that in our community called the Tragedy and Hope Online Research and Development Community. And that's where people support our work so that we can put it out for free and keep doing it with integrity.
Excellent. See, I knew you'd come through. Oh, you know, this is one thing. A lot of the people are inspired to go over to Tragedy. I want to participate. I want to learn. Or a lot of times, you know, here come the guys are going, yeah, did you know this? Well, you should think this about that. And I got the better plan for humanity. And here's my plan. And how do you treat those guys? Go, next, delete. I mean, you know, they come. You know, what kind of infiltration attempts are there on your site?
Well, we don't really have a whole lot of that, because most of the people who come there are genuinely interested in learning for themselves. And it's pretty easy to weed out somebody who's, you know, expressing that they either are not there to learn or that they're there to cause just disruption or whatever. But, you know, the idea is that, you know, through communicating with people who want to learn, you can provide them with this information. They can go through it on their own time. And the idea is that I don't have any grand plan for humanity, except I know humanity cannot be free as long as individual minds are slaved and enslaved by their oppressors.
Yeah, no more enslaved than those that think they're free. You know, is that changing, though? Are a lot of people, do you think, that are going, nah, I'm not buying into the, no.
They don't have to buy into anything, and you're not going to convince everybody, but there are billions of people on this planet who have had their lives stolen by, you know, loading an improper, fallacy-ridden education where they think they know things from learning from declarative sentences and not asking questions. And so when you bring it back, everyone now has this new awakening where they can start asking their questions, finding valid answers, and the answers are mounting up. And it's unassailable. It's unassailable. The people who run this planet are intellectually bankrupt. They rely on force, fraud, and coercion, and especially the apathy of those who don't want to take action, don't want to think for themselves, and outsource their thinking to the methods of collectivism.
You know, I gave a presentation, it's been less than a couple of weeks ago, that to a group of, you know, they say they're libertarian, but they're really kind of, you know, the Cato Republican, if we were in charge, we'd rule better, Obamacare's bad, but ours would be better kind of thing. And my point that I was making to him is that, look, you're the same. You're just another side of the same coin, man. You're just this whole concept that the people need to have governance done a certain way. They're just doing it wrong. That I don't know how you can justify you're any different. I don't get it. And I see it as a generational thing. It's the indoctrination of a society, of a culture that was bombarded by all this. You know, back in America, when America used to be, I was the first generation that grew up knowing there was something wrong to begin with. I mean, every evening I'm having dinner and I'm watching the Vietnam War play out the same scenes over and over and over on the news. Even as a 7-year-old kid, I'm going, man, they don't have any more footage than that? I mean, holy crap, you know? So again, if you're going to have to show war, at least get some new images or something. So they do this propagandizing, then we get Watergate, then you have the Iran hostage crisis, then you got the Middle East oil and OPEC and all this kind of thing. I grew up before puberty understanding, you know, the highlight of America was the moon landing, and ever since then it was just all, you know, just the war and control and bad guys in charge and corruption and just this tyrannical blah blah. And I'm going, look, my generation, finally, for the first time, the bloom was falling off. You know what I mean? So now we're in a situation to where you can amp that up by a gazillion. And I don't understand what mechanism or how the bad guys think they're going to maintain their control over the minds of people when they have access to information like what you do. I don't know what their end game is. It's going to have to be like discovery of aliens from Alpha Centauri, whatever the hell, descending on. I mean, even if they got to genetically create them. I mean, you know, if they can, they will. I mean, you know, they'll do whatever, you know, clone De La leopard and human thing behind a whiz-bang aircraft kind of look we need to combine against the whatever because they can. I mean, nothing would surprise me anymore. I'm wondering what their next step is. How are they going to try and maintain the control? What do you think they're going to have to do?
Their next step is to they're betting on our apathy. They're betting that the corruption of our education system, which has led to our subservient nature and being dependent on authorities to think for us and tell us what to do and protect us when there's a guy around who's 19 years old and might be dangerous, right? The American way is to protect ourselves as individuals, to use our minds to defend ourselves, to govern ourselves autonomously using logic and reason and our five senses of reality. So, you know, they're betting on our apathy. They're betting you won't go do the homework and find out what they didn't teach you in school. And they're betting that you'll just rely on what you think you know. And, you know, this is just another, you know, conversation you can discard as arbitrary and not count on. But, you know, if you listen to what John Taylor Gatto has to say in the Ultimate History Lesson, if you sit through that conversation in that interview, you will see step by step how it's been rolled out. And there's more than 200 footnotes and references. You can see it for free on YouTube, on our page, tragedyandhope.com. It's under videos and films.
And the solution? You know, you go to some of these guys coming out of school right now, enormous debt, school loan debt, no job. You know, nothing, and they're begging to get into, somebody give me a job so I can get in and start paying taxes. I mean,
it's indentured servitude, and you're indentured through the ignorance to think that you couldn't get an education of a world-class nature for less than a penny. You know, you have internet access, you can type, you can get a world-class education. You don't need to pay, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 a year for some other people to use declarative sentences that teach you what exists.
So then you're encouraging the people going into higher education to don't waste the money. You know, learn something else. And the people that have already been duped out of this thing, you know, their solution should be what? I mean,
don't waste money you don't have in the first place. Don't indenture yourself to the future. You know, when you could go ask those questions, travel the world, meet people, read the history books that are out there. You know, even just consuming our podcast or even our Twitter feed, that is more of an education than what you're getting in college these days. And it's what you need.
No, I'm with you, brother. All right. Richard Grove. TragedyandHope.com. This is, they're such an asset to the community. I'm just, you know, there's, it's division of labor. Everybody's got their own thing to do. You know, mine is a little bit different. I get to a point to where, wow, okay, they're bad. Now what? I want to withhold my support of the empire, of the beast. I don't want to keep feeding my own oppression. You know, and it's between the ears. And if you want to, you know, save some family members, save a generation next, save, you know, some, you know, grandchildren and so on, you know, you got to have tools. And a lot of times you're not a prophet in your own land. I can tell you that right now. But, you know, there's assets out there for you, tools, tragedy, and hope. Richard Grove. Hey, he's agreed. Freedom Summit, February.